In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh yeah, time to talk movies and more. Alan Adams from The Main Edge is with us in studio. Happy Monday, Al.
And to you as well.
Oh my goodness, well, we were talking about it earlier. A new pooch in the house. You guys are fostering the adorable Trixie. How are things going so far?
We're doing okay. Yeah, we're doing okay. We initially thought we're rescuing through an organization called Three Dogs Rescue. They're based in Berwick, and we initially thought we were going to drive to Berwick to pick up a dog on Saturday, and then on Friday they sent us a message and we're like, "Hey, can you be at the Home Depot in Bangor at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon?" And the answer was yes. Yes, we sure can. They do have volunteers up here. And because there were multiple people preparing to foster, they were able to bring the dogs
nice
to us. And so, yeah, we went to the Home Depot parking lot, picked her up, like went in, and it was just immediately, it was like, I don't think we were anticipating a dog this young.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's 12 weeks old. I mean, she's, wow, again, just a baby. She came to us with a different name, but we've taken to calling her Trixie, named after famed girl detective Trixie Belden from the young adult novels. Sheridan was a big fan growing up, and so that was just sort of where we landed. And yeah, it's been interesting. You know, obviously that young, not really potty trained, although she's been pretty good about. She hasn't peed in the house, really, a couple times, but she's been pretty good about that. We figured out her signal for when it's getting ready to be time. We have had a couple of poops.
No, dear.
And Sheridan and I talked about this. I'd almost rather have a poop.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it's like as long as nobody, like, steps on it and grinds it into the carpet, like, it'll come up pretty easily, mm-hmm. whereas you don't have to, like, really get in and scrub when it's pee and stuff. But she's very sweet, very playful. It turns out we found out, because when we would feed her, they told us to feed her only a very little bit at a time. Sheridan has taken to calling it the hungry, hungry hippos time. You remember hungry, hungry hippos?
Oh, yes.
Where the things like go yeah. and just pull up. That's what it's like when she eats. Like, it's just like rapid fire. Like, and it turns out like, when she was born, the mom had 10 puppies and
oh,
so was
yeah, you gotta fight for what you can get,
struggled to make sure everyone was fed, and so she's developed a little bit of a complex as far as food is concerned. So we're just trying to fatten her up a little bit. You know, other than that, it's you know, the weekend it was Sheridan and I both, so we were able to sort of take turns and whatnot, but Sheridan had to go to work today. I was working from home. And so I was all alone, for the most part it was fine. But, as I've mentioned, on a couple of occasions, both to you and on social media, we did our first, tandem walk this morning. And it was, you'd think that, tell you that Fern Street's never seen such a show. I'm out there cause she's 3 months old. She doesn't know how leashes work.
Right.
And Stella, bless her heart, very patient. A little, like, she's still got some doubts, certainly.
Well, sure.
But she's very patient with the little one. But yeah, at certain times we'd be going along and it would be fine. And then the next thing you know, like, one's going this way. The puppies run around my legs 3 times and, I'm a falling building away from being Buster Keaton. It's really something. But she's very sweet. She's very, very affectionate. She loves toys. Stella has been, a begrudgingly hospitable host. she's not super jazzed about having a little one in the house, but Stella's pretty easygoing as far as that stuff goes.
Well,
so that's nice. But yeah, it's been really fun. We're having a good time. And the truth is, like, they're already receiving inquiries about her. So we'll wait and see how long she's actually with us. But you know, as long as we get a chance to fatten her up a little bit,
yeah,
you know, give her some toys, give her some affection. And then we'll see what happens going forward.
Nice. Well, that's awesome that you're doing that. And hope I get to meet her. She seems like a
sweet. She's a very sweet, sweet girl. We're at the point now where we can we can start introducing her out more into the world, as opposed to they say to sort of try to minimize interactions first couple of days just to let her readjust. But she'll be out and about. So I have no doubt that the people will get what they want.
All right, just a couple of movies this week. You saw two. Where do we begin?
Well, real quick before we talk about the new ones, I did want to give an update on a movie that we talked about last week, the Facing Nolan documentary.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There are a series of interstitial scenes in the documentary that are recreations of young Nolan Ryan throwing from the mound. And I didn't know this when I watched the movie. I only just found this out. But it turns out that the pitcher playing Nolan Ryan in this movie is former Bangor Ram and UMaine Black Bear Justin Courtney.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a
he's a
minor leaguer for the he's in the Mets system now. He got drafted by the Angels, but he's in the Mets system now. So it's kind of a reverse sort of journey from what Nolan Ryan took. And I guess the filmmakers reached out to Tom House, who's worked with Courtney in the past, and asked if he could suggest someone who would kind of, you know, who knew how to pitch and basically filled the uniform, you know. And Courtney's 6'4", same as Ryan, and
wow.
So they brought him in, and I. Yeah, I had no idea, but it's just this wonderful, fun little connection to the area. But yeah, word on the street is it's going to that film will be available for streaming. I think in about a month, like sometime mid July is what.
I can't wait to see it. Sounds great.
So yeah, I just wanted to pass that along to the listeners because I thought that was pretty cool.
That is indeed.
But as far as new movies go, Rich, do you want to talk about the good one or the bad one? Because it's been a while since we had such a black and white sort of situation with regard to good and bad.
Well, you know, I always loves it when you dislike something. So let's save the bad one for last.
Okay, that's fair. I saw a very good movie on Hulu this past weekend called Fire Island. It's a romantic comedy, gay rom-com, essentially. Set on the legendary iconic gay vacation spot Fire Island, it's one of those movies where I was like, oh yeah, I like rom-coms, and you know, this is nice, it's nice that we're getting more progressive versions of these types of stories. But as I learned more, it's like, oh wait, you mean it's, you know, this movie's inspired by Pride and Prejudice? Well, that's pretty cool. The director is Andrew Ahn, who made among other wonderful movies, Driveways, which I think loved very much.
That was so good.
A couple of years ago, and so it's like, oh, and it just kept adding up and adding up, and so I started developing. I'm like, oh well, the expectations started to grow. And and then you find out, oh, the star of the movie also wrote the screenplay. This guy Joel Kim Booster, and you put it all together, and it's like, okay, so it's. I was always going to dig it because I'm in the bag for these sorts of things, but as it turns out, it's a really good movie. It basically revolves around this group of friends who have an annual sort of vacation trip to Fire Island. Most of them live in New York City, but this is the one time every year where they're all together, and they are very fortunate in that they are able to go and stay with a friend of theirs, an older lesbian and former brunch server colleague, played by Margaret Cho, who won a very lucrative lawsuit. I'm not going to tell you what the lawsuit was because it's pretty funny, she used the money to buy a little house on Fire Island. And so she invites them to come stay with her for a week every year. And so you've got this guy, Noah, that's Joel Kim Booster, who also wrote the screenplay, kind of finding his way, smart guy, articulate, very well read. Kind of struggling to find his way a little bit, not really sure what he wants from life, kind of living the hookup life, not really looking for any sort of serious relationship, et cetera, et cetera. And meanwhile, his best friend, Howie, played by Bowen Yang, who's fantastic in this movie, is, you know, he's pretty successful. He's working for a startup out west, but, you know, came back for the trip. But he's never really had a long-term relationship or even really a boyfriend. And so Noah decides that he's going to forego his own efforts at hooking up this year in an effort to help Howie, well, get laid. Like, that's that's the plan. And then their group winds up encountering a much wealthier, well-to-do, fancy pants group. There's a doctor, a pediatrician named Charlie. That's and, you know, he and Howie kind of hit it off. And it's like, oh, this is great. But Howie's friend Will has some questions about, Charlie's friend Will has some questions about all of this. You know, and then you've got some jerks, you know, circling in the mix on both sides. And then as things progress, things become a little bit more complicated. We start to get not only a will they, won't they with Charlie and Howie, but some of the other group dynamics are shifting in ways that, you know, may or may not happen romantically. You don't know. You know, that sort of immediate antagonism that often means in rom-coms. These two are going to wind up getting together. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't, and you're going to have to just watch it to find out which is which. And this is where I confess, I do have a bit of an Austin-shaped hole in my former English majordom. I read Pride and Prejudice, my first go-around in college, probably 30 years ago at this point, or close to it. But my lovely bride is much more knowledgeable about these things and informed me, yes, your instincts are right. This is hewing actually pretty closely to Pride and Prejudice. So that was nice. But yeah, it's really well made. It's really, really sweet. The relationship dynamics are remarkable, both in terms of the romantic chemistry and the friendships. And here's the thing, Booster and Yang are real life best friends. Like, they know each other very well, and that chemistry reads very clearly on stage. The two of them together are really a lot of fun to watch. The dialogue is very witty, very quippy, unafraid to get you know how sometimes writers try to strike a balance between highbrow and lowbrow, and it doesn't always work. Like, it just sometimes it feels forced, or sometimes it leans too far in one direction or the other, and it just doesn't quite click. That is not a problem here. Like, it is, they go from sophisticated sort of repartee to, frankly, jokes about the no-no zone. You know what I'm talking about? and they move back and forth seamlessly, and so you have this wonderful sort of group dynamic between this group of friends who are just so clearly just this wonderful affection that just emanates from the screen. Everyone wants to do right by everyone else, like, even when they're being catty or really just harshing on one another. Like, it's all coming from a place of love, and that you never lose sight of that, which is hard to do, like, especially like in a movie. Like, it's hard enough to do it in person. Like, you know, you got to know someone pretty well to really talk trash about them and have them not take it personally. To see that play out on that sort of relationship play out on screen is pretty wonderful. Now, I'm a big proponent of representation, particularly in this subgenre of movie. I love a progressive rom-com, and this one not only tackles gay relationships, which is which would be enough on its own. It also addresses a lot of sort of prejudices within that culture against Asian Americans, because Booster and Yang are both Asian American. One of the other primary characters is also Asian American, and we get to see sort of that dynamic playing out alongside the more traditionally attractive, white guys, rich white guys in particular. And so you bring all this stuff together at the hands of someone like Andrew Ahn, who is just a remarkably gifted filmmaker. If you haven't seen Driveways, I can't recommend it enough. But this movie, as far as follow-ups go, it's very different from that film, but also, spiritually of a piece, I guess, in that it does really focus on the idea that regardless of who we are, we share more similarities than we do differences. And, cloaking that sort of ideology in a gay rom-com, frankly, kind of brilliant. And the movie really, really works. I had a marvelous time watching this movie. And honestly, I think most of the people out there listening, I think they would too.
All right. That's the good. Now the ugly. Tell us about Interceptor.
Man, like it's one of those things where it's like, sometimes you go into a movie and you're like, okay, this is going to be bad. Like, I know this is going to be a bad movie before I even start it. But then you start watching it and you're like, oh dear God, I had no idea. Because there's bad. And then there's bad. And that is a Rubicon that Interceptor gleefully crosses. Look, the proliferation of streaming services has done a lot, both good and bad, for the movie industry. An outfit like Netflix, if they're committed to giving you a new movie every week, that increase in quality, in quantity, does not necessarily mean an increase in quality. Like, they're not all going to be winners, Rich, and this is one that is decidedly not a winner. I'm questioning whether I'm even going to bother talking about the plot. But the basic gist is the United States nuclear defense system consists of two interceptor platforms, one based at a base in Alaska and one on a floating sort of sea platform situation. These are basically our defense against nuclear missiles launched from our enemies, specifically Russia. But then, once you know it, Rich, the bad guys get their hands on some of the missiles, and they're like, "We're gonna blow up America," and before they tell everyone they're gonna blow up America, they pull off an inside job at the base in Alaska and shut it down. And so now this one vessel floating out in the middle of the Pacific, it is our only hope at stopping these 16 Russian nuclear missiles. But our terrorists did not account for Captain J.J. Collins, played by Elsa Pataky. She's a woman. She's been reassigned following the fallout from a sort of Me Too style complaint against a superior officer. She's being punished, and so she gets assigned to this floating platform with missiles. And then the bad guys show up, and she shuts it down, and they're the only person who can stop them, the only person who can protect America, it's Captain J.J. Collins.
Well, wouldn't you know?
And so we spend basically an hour watching this person poorly act, poorly execute action sequences, and then occasionally wander out into a clearly CGI'd backdrop. It's not just that the story doesn't make sense, although I will say, I know a movie is struggling narratively when I, sitting by myself in my living room, turn to my dog and say, "What the hell is going on?" multiple times. And I did that probably half a dozen times in this movie because none of it makes any sense. There's this guy played by Luke Bracey. He's the sort of leader of this plot, and they have some sort of weird back and forth stuff between the locked door because she's locked herself in the command center and he can't get in because he wants to take the interceptors offline so that the missiles can go. It's so dumb. And Elsa Pataky is not a good actress at all. You might be saying to yourself, well, how does someone who's so clearly out of their depth, both in terms of the performative, the dialogue, and the physical aspect of an action movie, how does this person wind up getting to star in a film? Well, here's the thing. She's married to Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, who is an executive producer on the film.
Imagine that.
And also appears in an extended cameo with a ridiculous long hair wig. He's apparently an employee at some sort of electronics big box store, and he's watching all of these events play out on one of the giant TVs. Because, Rich, I didn't mention this part to you, but our terrorists, they're able to tap into the emergency broadcast system.
Oh,
and so they set up a live feed broadcast all over the world, so the world could see, I guess, what's happening. I don't understand. Like I said, what the hell is going on? Like, that's it. That was just one of many occurrences where I went through this. Like, you guys know I'm not necessarily averse to a bad movie. Like, sometimes watching a bad movie can be fun. Some of my finest movie watching experiences have been like sitting down with some friends and watching a movie that we all know to be terrible, but just, you know, sort of embracing the terrible and having a few laughs. This is not that movie, Rich. It's not bad. It's so bad that it moves beyond so bad it's good, and then becomes bad again. Like, it's so bad that I'm. Like, I find myself struggling to articulate how terrible it is. It is one of those films where, like, I regret watching it. Like, I'm like, I spent an hour and 45 minutes of my life in front of this movie. And granted, like, there were stretches where I just tuned out because I you could tell. It's like, oh, we're just going to, you know, stand in this little box for a little while. All right, well, let's see what's going on Twitter. Look up every once in a while. Nothing's changing. There are, you know, a couple of weird gunfights that don't make any sense. Hand-to-hand combat that might be the sole redeeming quality in this film, only because it's hilarious to watch, because this woman does not know what she's doing. You see a lot of stunt people just basically trying not to hurt her. Like, that's what the action sequences look like. It's like, you know, it's like when you're an adult and your toddler is throwing a tantrum and they're swinging around and stuff, and you're just like, okay, you're just trying to make sure nobody gets hurt. Like, that's what these action sequences look like. And then occasionally we'll go and we cut to the closed circuit footage of the president in her war room, because that's a thing that we do, otherwise the movie's only 45 minutes long and we gotta really stretch this thing out so Netflix can get their money's worth. I did hear that, the whole deal was they tried to minimize locations and cast size in order to keep the budget at a certain level, which, great. But, you know, they still had $15 million, Rich. It's not like they had nothing. So, why this movie is as bad as it is, I honestly can't tell you. part of me is like, you know, it's like, oh, should I talk about the director and the screenwriters and stuff? No, like, it's like, you know, they're probably as embarrassed about it as I am. So I'm just going to leave it be. And then she'll climb out onto the thing and it's like, oh yes, here's our green screen. Here's our green screen. Oh yeah. Random guy that we remember from 45 minutes earlier. Oh yeah. That guy, he's here. I'm a little perplexed as to how exactly to tell you, because I feel like I might be underselling of this movie. Like, it's like, I have regrets. And I think anyone who watches this movie is also going to have regrets. Basically I'm glad I didn't make my wife sit through it too. At least
so is she.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think you need to see Interceptor.
I don't think I will after this, but thank you for taking one for the team.
Oh man. Here's hoping this weekend's a little better.
It's Alan Adams talking movies on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
You tell Stella, by the way, she's always the queen.
Oh, she knows.
Okay. All right. We'll see you Wednesday.
Yes, sir.